Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic, and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 96, being recorded on the 30th of September, 2015, with special guest Mahesh Thiagarajan. My name is Sujit Mello, and on Skype with me, I have my esteemed colleagues, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and our special guest. Now, before we give Mahesh a chance to introduce himself, and we really appreciate Mahesh taking the time to join us today, I'm sure he has a busy schedule, and we can't wait to hear from him on some of the new announcements in the IaaS space. Let's bring our listeners up to date with some recent updates. So, guys, we had AzureCon recently, and I heard they announced a whole bunch of things there.
They did, or we did, I guess. Not they, we.
Yeah, what's your favorite one, Evan?
Oh, well, I don't know. I don't know if I say it's my favorite, because it's certainly going to, being in support, it's going to drive a lot of volume. But I think the one but it's probably going to be a favorite with our customers, which is Express Route for Office 365. Right? Yeah. We get asked about this all the time prior to, and now it's out there and it's GA, and they're going to be able to take advantage of the same, optimizations and optimize traffic that they see with Azure to Office 365 now.
So what is that by the a customer then doing putting in?
So they end up getting high speed, low latency, private traffic to the data center instead of just going over the public internet, right? And all the challenges and potential security issues and everything else associated with doing that.
Oh, so if previously they had, let's say, Exchange on premises. This is a much easier sell now, right? Because they kind of have their own private connection to Exchange, but in the cloud.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought through the implications from that side as far as somebody who kind of wasn't ready to migrate because their stuff, they were going to be talking over the public internet. Let's be honest. I mean, all of our phones and our portable devices as we roam around the world, right, are going over the public internet most of the time. The primary driver is people that are already using it and want that optimized connection.
Oh, so it's the performance. It's the performance and the speed that it offers more than
anything else. And reliability, right? I mean, there's significantly higher reliability with something like a dedicated connection than just public stuff. But it wouldn't surprise me if you do see some customers that had some concerns about sending their stuff across the public internet that would jump on it now because it's now going through these private connections.
Okay, great. And I think one of my favorites for sure was the Azure File Storage general availability, which they announced. I think we've talked about it a little bit in the past, where it used to be called Azure Files, I believe.
Yep.
Which is the SMB protocol, and now they've got SMB 3.0 support, and you've got the like a file explorer in the portal. It looks like this thing has finally hit big time over here.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like if you're in Azure, because it still has I didn't see a change on this, doesn't mean I didn't miss it, that the limitation is still it's within data center, right? But if you've got your VMs out in the data center, yeah, it's a no-brainer to do this for storage, right? Instead of setting up some DFS server or something,
Yeah.
I just can't imagine why you would do that with this around.
Cool. And what about you, Kale? What do you like?
Yeah, the storage thing is big because it had a bunch of other stuff, not just files. I mean, there was some new stuff with the ARM. I think it's that storage resource provider. There's some new stuff that came there. There was some stuff around SAS tokens, like you can now use IP restrictions and protocol and like a little bit more granular support on the SAS from security, like the shared access signatures we use. So there's a bunch of different things that came along with that storage that I think are pretty big because that's like one of the core capabilities. But the other big one, and I think Evan had dropped it in here, was about GPUs. This is awesome because anybody with I think there's two different sets here that would like kind of benefit from this. It looks like is there's some sort of visualization, and this stuff's like pretty new. Like we only got some tidbits of it, but there's some high-end visualization capabilities with this thing. But there's also the ability to do, which one's closer to me, was like CUDA and some of the GPGPU stuff, where we could run our complex calculations up there and use, you know, I mean that's huge because these NVIDIA cards.
You're doing Bitcoin. Admit it, Kale. You're doing Bitcoin.
Well, I think you already stopped that, right? You storage, or... but no, but being able to run like on thousands of cores, like that are very dense, like that is really cool. I think that's going to open up huge things for analytics, definitely.
Okay, sounds good. And Mahesh, I'm sure you've close to all the stuff. What was one of your favorites in the new announcements?
Oh, I think one of the things that is actually underplayed but not very visible is the announcement of the instance metadata service that is available now for all VMs. So what this means is a customer can now, from within a VM, write a simple curl command to just get more information about when the reboots happen, or you know, more information from right within the VM. So you can
I read about that. I'm so glad you brought that up. That is such an awesome feature.
This is the one where you can basically periodically poll and you get advanced notification that says, hey, we're getting ready to come hit your cluster in the next whatever 10 minutes or whatever for a planned reboot, so you can drain traffic, right? That's exactly that feature.
And I think this has been one of the, you know, the long-term coming features where people have been waiting for it, especially when the VMs go down at random times. This gives them more predictability in from within the app. They can control it. They can take decisions to, you know, drain workloads and things like that.
Mahesh, I hadn't had a chance to dig into that much. I mean, these days I don't play so much at the guest level, right? I'm mostly networking. But I mean that doesn't cover when we have some sort of hardware failure or something that causes the VM to go out unexpectedly, does it?
No, so it doesn't give you, I mean, obviously when a hardware failure happens, we don't know that it happened, right?
Right.
But what you can do is you can definitely pull back later, and if there was ever a reboot on the virtual machine itself, it would give you information about, hey, you were rebooted, you were moved, and things like that. So it'd give you an
identity. Okay, so this is not just the kind of the heads up, this is coming. It's also the same way, you would use the same mechanism to go say, hey, what was my history like?
Right, it gives you the events. Yeah, exactly.
Got you.
Exactly.
Okay.
And there's more information. I mean, this is kind of our strategy where we're going to push more information through this protocol, you know, from within the VM for apps to take better decisions, like information about the fault domain and the data domain that you might be in, or like in the future maybe availability zones and things like that. So this is definitely the APIs that you should learn and kind of write use in your apps going forward. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. No, that makes a lot of sense.
Okay. So it'll notify you. Sorry, I don't know much about this, but this will notify you. But does it also allow you to, like, postpone it? Like, can you call into this thing and say, hang on, give me time? Or?
Oh, Kale, great question. Nobody would ask that. No. So I think we're looking at that as well. It's not something that we released at this point, but it's definitely in the you know, in the planning, and we're actively looking at how do we allow apps to push back and say, hey, I'm not done yet. Just give me some more time, or you know, basically, you know, more so a two-way communication model, if you will. But today it's just more so pull, where you know the app or you know needs to make the call in to get the data. But in the future, we will potentially look at adding the ability where it can actually do it both ways. Yep.
Yeah, you can imagine. Awesome. You can imagine a world where, like, you know, you're saying, "Hey, I'm, you know, maybe Exchange or, you know, or SQL Server, something that takes some time to shut down because it has to, you know, commit, you know, a certain amount of data." Yeah, you can see, like, "Hey, I need 5 more minutes. I need 5 more minutes." And eventually, I guess the platform at some point says, "Hey, I can't wait any longer." But yeah, at least it becomes a more dynamic conversation, I guess, is kind of what you're saying over time. Right.
Okay. Exactly. Yep. Yeah, that was. I mean, there were tons of announcements, but this was one of the interesting ones.
Admit it. You wrote it. You spec'd it. Admit it. Come on.
That was a good set of sessions. They're very compact, and the recordings are really great. We'll put a link in the show notes so our listeners have that. But definitely recommend anybody who's wants to keep up with all things Azure. I think it's like maybe 4 or 5 hours in all, right? Of all the keynotes, and and then you have all these sessions that you can pick from, various tracks and whatnot. So something our listeners should definitely take a look at. All right, Mahesh, listeners have already heard you speak, and they're probably you know, keen and interested to know what your background is and what you do at Microsoft.
Oh, so I'm a program manager in the Azure Compute team, and I've been working in Azure for about 2.5 years, and I worked on the basically shipping the new IaaS API platform in the last year or so, and that's what I've been working on. And my background, you know, it's typically been a lot of networking. So I used to work in the Hyper-V networking team where I worked on SRIOV and, you know, the virtual machine queues and, you know, features like that. But in the last year or so, I've been working on the new compute network and storage APIs under Azure Resource Manager.
Wow.
I didn't know you came from the networking space, Mahesh.
Oh.
So we probably have a lot of people in common these days.
Yes, so. Yes, we do. I've been trying to stay away from you, Evan.
Evan, wasn't that your area of expertise as well?
What, the networking spot?
Networking
stuff?
Side, yeah.
It is now. I when I first moved into this space, networking was kind of a side piece to the rest of the stuff my team was doing. We restructured a, you know, a few months back, and now basically if somebody says Azure and networking in the same breath, chances are they're working with my team from a support perspective. But yeah, if it's all things networking these days.
So I think the guys we were talking about it the other day, that IaaS, I think, was the very original IaaS, was the first service that we offered in Azure, correct? Is that correct?
Flip it around. PaaS was.
Oh, PaaS was, and then we came with IaaS.
Yeah.
And so that was how many years, like?
It was back in 2012, yeah.
2012.
No, so. it was before that, because I've been in this space since 2000. Oh, we might have GA'd in 2012. Well.
So,
yeah, that was right.
Evan, you've been in the team for long, but the preview was announced in 2012 summer, yeah.
For IaaS or for PaaS?
For IaaS.
Okay, So PaaS was maybe 2009?
Yeah.
2009,
so.
Something like that?
Yeah. I was still in college.
God.
All right, a way to make us feel old, Amish.
I'm going to date you guys.
Do you even know about the VM role we used to have back then?
Yes, thing? Yes, I do. I just joined the team and that was deprecated, yep.
So it's been like a good 3 or 4 years now that's been out there. What has driven us to kind of almost, you know, come up with this new model for IaaS? What are some of the things that led us to believe, okay, you know, we can't just keep updating the existing model. We need to come up with a new model.
So, from a customer standpoint, there's a customer standpoint and also from an architectural standpoint internally. But from a customer standpoint, one of the things that, you know, we are trying to unify the APIs and make it more RESTful under Azure Resource Manager. And as part of this, we also made some phenomenal changes to the APIs themselves, where it actually does more parallelization, so it can actually scale up to the workload that customers are demanding from us today. Previously, if you wanted to go spin up like a, you know, 1,000, you know, or a 100 node cluster or a 200 node cluster, you'd have to wait like quite a few hours before those VMs came up and actually making the calls. But with the new platform, we can do things in parallel, where these VMs actually start up in parallel. And and if you go look at the Azure Con session, there are a bunch of sessions where we talk about how, you know, we can spin up VMs in parallel. And in some cases, Linux, it takes us less than 4 minutes to bring up some of these, you know, large scale clusters online. So definitely that was one key focus area. We wanted to make the APIs RESTful. We wanted to make sure that they are highly performant and can meet the demands and the scale demands that customers expect out of us.
Now, you say you wanted to make the APIs RESTful. I mean, and normally when we're in the IaaS space, we're not used to calling any APIs, right?
Right.
These are the internal APIs to the IaaS platform, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, so these are the public APIs that, you know, anybody who's writing an app to would call. But technically, you know, if you're using a PowerShell commandlet, which most of the IaaS, you know, IT pros kind of end up using, underneath that commandlet, all that it's doing is calling an API. And the service that runs this or manages this is just exposing the APIs. And all the different clients like a portal or a PowerShell or an Azure CLI or a Visual Studio is just making calls to the same REST endpoint with these APIs.
I see. So these are now RESTful APIs and previously
RESTful, highly performant APIs.
And Mahesh, wasn't some of this about? And this is something not really for customers, but it allows us to be faster and produce things more efficiently for customers. But some of this was about decoupling some of our internal dependencies.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was
the original design.
Right. I think that was some of the internal motivation as well, where we wanted to make sure that we're very agile, and we wanted to be even more agile, where we kind of are, you know, have deployed it into more of a regional architecture model, which makes it easy for us to roll out things really, really fast, get things out to customers as soon as possible, and also a lot of decoupling. And you will see some of that decoupling and all, as advantages too, because, you know, we've made network interface a top-level entity, which was not there before. So you get the flexibility of actually defining network interfaces, and these network interfaces can float around, can be attached to a virtual machine on the fly and things like that, which was not possible before. So we've kind of introduced concepts that makes it easy for customers too as well.
Yeah. Okay. Now, what's the official way to call this? Is it IaaS V2 or a V2 VM? I hear various ways to call these.
Right. I think the official marketing term that we use is IaaS under Azure Resource Manager. So that's what we use. IaaS under Azure Resource Manager is the official way we refer to the new platform. And the old platform is referred to as Classic IaaS. Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
And this is available immediately, or is this coming soon? What is the...
So we announced, I mean, it's available right now. We announced a preview in May. We went GA sometime in June. And in fact, as Evan pointed out early, we also announced express route support for the virtual networks that are deployed in this model with Azure Con as well. So pretty much we have all the features that used to be supported in the classic IaaS stack on the new stack as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that was actually one thing that I see from a support side, right? Because we get a lot of cases, someone trying to do something in ARM, and they just can't do it yet. I'm sure there's still some things that are missing, but as I go through the kind of the list and I look at the cases that are coming in, there's less and less things, or significantly less things that people that were missing in ARM compared to where we were, 2-3 weeks ago or whatever.
Right. And then that was one of the key goals for the team, is to continue to drive and bridge the gap in some key areas to ensure that, we make it easy for customers to kind of leverage the new platform, because there is a lot of significant advantages. And I just touched on at a high level on just the complexity aspect and how, we do better performance. But, by coming under Azure Resource Manager, customers get a lot of flexibility in building out apps as a whole versus just thinking them as, infrastructure. So imagine a case where if you wanted to go deploy a SharePoint farm before, the customer would have to write a 2,000 line piece of code in PowerShell just to kind of say, hey, I need to spin up the AD VMs, I need to go then spin up my SharePoint VMs and, set up SQL, all of that. But with the templates, we have actually gone ahead and built a huge content of templates in our GitHub repository, where customers can go pick them. In a single click, you can actually get some of these really complicated applications just deployed. And we also make it easy for you to author them using Visual Studio, and we're continuing to improve as well. But overall, this template-based model makes it easy to build complicated apps and deploy them.
Oh, okay. So now if I'm a customer and I've got a bunch of VMs in the classic mode,
right?
What's my, my motivation, and what's the process that I would use to move into this new ARM-based IaaS model?
Right. I think from a strategy standpoint, templating is just another, we see this as another way in which you can get things done on the cloud. So if you are a customer who's, very, very proficient in PowerShell and you're super, good at it, you can continue to leverage the new, the new PowerShell commandlets to go deploy the same environment up. What you're going to get is a lot of flexibility in terms of, better performance, better deployment times, and you're also going to get a lot of capabilities like role-based access control. You're going to get tags-based billing. You're going to get three fault domains. So there are a lot of new features that are primarily added into the resource manager model, which you would probably not, be able to use using the classic model. So that's one. If you are a customer who was, is looking at migrating some of that VMs over, we are actually actively working on a platform migration support model where we can move your VMs, if the IaaS VMs are just in a virtual network, we're building a model where we can move these VMs without any downtime from the classic to the Azure Resource Manager stack as well. So that is something that we'll hopefully announce towards the end of the year, early next year. But we're building both models where you can pick and choose what you want to do. And if you want to continue with classic, but then you want to leverage our migration model, we're coming out with that very shortly as well.
I can't think of one, but I just want to sanity check this. I mean, is there any incentive that, assuming there's not some, feature that you just can't get, that's not in ARM today that you absolutely need and you're deploying today, is there any reason that you can think of that somebody would want to stay in Classic? or is it really, you know, this is something you really should strongly consider if it's an opportunity, versus
right.
it kind of being, you know, well, maybe I don't have to type thing.
So I think if, you know, as I said, there are lots of advantages, and there are very good documentation that explains some of the advantages that we have in the new stack. But the only reason why, you know, we have some customers kind of thinking about it is they have been waiting for the migration solution. They love the new stack. They love the fact that they can actually now track, you know, each resource's, you know, individual you know, spending by their tags and stuff like that. So there are a lot of new capabilities that they like, but they don't want to be in the, you know, in the management, you know, business of actually having multiple virtual networks that they need to manage. So they just want to manage one single virtual network. So they're waiting for the migration solution. So they would, once we have the migration solution, they would move their entire VNet and their set of resources that it has into the new stack, and then they will start managing it there. But if they want to leverage it today, they would have to deploy a virtual network and bridge the VNets together. And those are the only customers who we've heard that, hey, you know, we want to just manage one VNet, you know, and we want to stay in the classic till you guys have migration. But otherwise, we've seen a, you know, pretty good adoption on the customers switching over to the new stack and bridging the VNets together with, you know, gateways today already.
Yeah, that, I think that's probably, I would say that mirrors what I'm seeing from a support volume perspective, and not saying these things are broken. You know, nobody calls me to say everything works, right?
Right, obviously.
But, you know, I think if we look at the volume that we're getting in, it is starting to skew very, very heavily, you know, with new deployments where I would say I'm almost, not exclusively, but getting in that direction of
right.
new stuff being ARM. Old stuff's kind of a mix, right, obviously.
Right.
But almost right. anything new that I see is ARM.
Right.
So Mahesh, if we had, I'm just a couple scenarios I was thinking through, and I haven't tried these out yet, but if we had like things like where we have a website or a web app, and mm-hmm. we want to have that talk to a virtual network, so if we had V2 VMs in their VNet, it's okay, like that'll all work, we can attach like a web app?
So the web app integration part of it is something that the team is actually working on right now. So the web app integration today works in a couple of models, and one of the models is it actually leverages the point-to-site capability to go deploy. So the point-to-site capability is something that is not rolled out yet in the ISV2 stack, and that is not supported immediately. So we're waiting for the point-to-site capability to come online before we can integrate the web apps, you know, with the V2 virtual network. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I think the other thing that that I see from this, like from customers, is you know, the ability to say, I want to clone this environment. Like that I think that templating is huge for that, because they say, hey, they mess around, they build architectures, and they say, here's what I want to build now. I know what it looks like up there. Here's my infrastructure.
Right.
Now, can you make another copy of that for QA and make another copy of that for this other environment? So.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a very common reason why people actually leverage the templates, because it's so easy to, you know, replicate the environments, especially when you're doing a dev and test. You know, it's so flexible that you can deploy 100 VMs for a web app and just test it and then say, hey, you know, I'm done with it. You can just delete the resource group, and it takes care of cleaning up all the resources underneath it. So there's a lot of flexibility in management as well as customers leverage the IaaS stack and the resource manager.
Do you see, I mean, the one thing that I have absolutely loved using, although I haven't quite yet figured out how to use it to make exact templates, but is the Resource Explorer. It really gives a really nice insight into how we've broken these things down and how the relationships and the various components and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It really shows the power of this kind of structure that we built with the ARM template or with the ARM architecture.
Absolutely, absolutely. I agree with you there. I think the, you know, it just kind of provides you a quick and dirty tree structure view, which is, you know, for any programmer that's just like so easy to understand what's going on, right? You get a quick view into, hey, I go into the subscription, what are the resources that I've deployed, and what are the properties for it, and especially in the case of virtual machine, we've gone ahead and done a lot more work in the diagnostics aspect, where you can actually go into a VM's instance view, and you can see, you know, the status for each specific object that you have in your virtual machine. For example, you can see what is the status of the disk, what is the status of the agent, what is the status of your extension, what is the status of your virtual machine. So we've broken down statuses so deep that it's very easy for you to quickly figure out what exactly happened with the virtual machine, instead of having to like go through a portal or run a bunch of PowerShell commandlets. It's just very simple.
Yep. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Now, Mahesh, have there been any enhancements in the networking area with these new VMs?
So primarily, I think, you know, from an enhancement standpoint, I think the fact that we made network interfaces as a floating object, and you know, we elevated the load balancers as a first class construct. Right, which was not the case before. Load balancers were implicit with cloud services. So those are some of the critical improvements that we made as part of this architecture, where we made network interfaces to float around. We made load balancers an object, which makes it easy for you to configure and view your app like how you would deploy them in on-premise, right? Because you know, when you come from the infrastructure world, you see these things as different pieces. But you know, in the cloud service model, they were all tied together and provided as one single monolithic object, which was hard for people to understand when they just come into Azure and understand the IaaS world. So that was one of the motivations for us to go decompose the model, give them the pieces that they just makes it easy for them to kind of put this together, build all the, you know, take all the building blocks, put a Lego box together, and then make it work, right? So, yeah.
Awesome. Excellent.
All right.
That's been some great information, guys. Anything else for Mahesh?
No, I think this is great, man. This is I'm looking forward to it. Once we get all the little intricacies figured out so we can make all these different services talk, I think it's going to be awesome. I think it's great right now. The templates are huge for, like I said, there's different environments. Everybody that I know that I've worked with, they've always asked for that, so it's great.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah,
thank you.
I'm looking forward to not debugging big, nasty, ugly PowerShell scripts. You know, I run this 4,000-line PowerShell script, and one of my VMs doesn't work. Great. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm really excited about the template stuff, too. That's probably my favorite.
One other question I did have, Mahesh, you were talking about the diagnostics. So one question I have is, will that stuff – so what I do a lot is when I'm working with stuff, and it's some PaaS and some IaaS, but in IaaS, when we're using, like, third-party libraries like, or third-party tools like Splunk or something like that,
right?
We have ways, like, we can put agents on the machines and do that stuff, but sometimes we end up writing this stuff to blob storage and then using that integration. So is there ways to take that diagnostic information you were talking about? Can that be surfaced through or written to, like, blob storage as well so you could just grab it from there? Or?
I think from a in VM standpoint, fundamentally the way you interact and use some of these capabilities remains as is. So if you were, you know, if there is an app that wrote to blob storage and use that for diagnostics purposes, you can continue to use that. So from an app standpoint, you wouldn't have to change a single line of code to make this work within the VM. So it would actually be identical. Obviously, we're still thinking more about a richer model where we can actually have these apps write to a generic service and serve these logs up. But that's something that's still in the, you know, the team's backlog, but you know, that's definitely, we're looking at it, but not there right now.
That's cool.
Yep.
Great. Well, yep. Mahesh, again, thank you very much. If there's any links that you wish to share with our listeners, please send them to me, and I'll put them in the show notes along with the recording of this podcast.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks, Mahesh. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks so much, guys. Yep.
Great. Good talking to you, guys.
Yep.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.